The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Know What Your Rights, the show dedicated to educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. I'm your host, Attorney Noah Davis, broadcasting from Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowwhatyourrights.com as we post the audio for each show, as well as follow-up information on each program. You can also email me at noah@knowwhatyourrights.com. State of Washington was admitted to the United States in 1889 as the 42nd state, at a time when we had 357,000 residents. Today, with 7.4 million people, Washington is currently the 13th most populous state, but with 60% of the population living in the greater Seattle-Tacoma metro. While the population is centralized around Seattle, our more rural communities are vital to our state's economy, as Washington is a leading lumber producer, as well as the nation's largest producer of apples, hops, pears, peas, raspberries, spearmint oil, and cherries. And second, and this is my favorite, so I had to add this one in, second only to California in wine production, and that's growing. We have something like over 600 wineries and growing as our viticulture area continues to expand. We are home to many naval, Air Force, and Army bases, along with their vibrant military communities. We're home to two large maritime ports, which, when taken together, rank in the top five or six in container traffic nationwide as we serve as that gateway to Asia. We are home to tech, to Boeing, Amazon, Starbucks, Nordstrom, Expedia, heavyweights like Microsoft, and such a strong growing biotech industry. We also have a marine climate in the west, extending to the dry, arid climate of the east. We have massive mountains and forests, yet a seemingly expansive desert in the east. We have a progressive, left-leaning population along the Puget Sound region and a more conservative, agrarian, religious population outside of Puget Sound, particularly as you go east. So how does Washington represent all of these divergent interests, economies, and viewpoints? That, my friends, is where the Washington legislature comes in. We are a bicameral legislature, meaning two houses, a lower House of Representatives, and an upper state Senate. We have 49 legislative districts divided up based upon population, not area, each electing two representatives and one senator. The 98 representatives serve two-year terms, while the 49 senators serve four. Perhaps much to the chagrin of Republicans, Democrats currently hold a 50-48 majority in the House and a 25-24 majority in the Senate. I believe there's an independent that ends up signing with the Republican to give that majority in the Senate, or to give those numbers in the Senate. Joining me today is one of those Democrats that comprise the majority. It's Mike Pelliciotti from the 30th District, which is comprised mostly of King County, but reaches into Pierce and represents Federal Way, Auburn, Des Moines, Pacific, and Milton, among other cities. Welcome to Know Your Rights, Mike Pelliciotti.
Hey, Noah, it's great to be here.
Mike, you come from a legal background. If you could tell us a little bit about your background before the legislature.
Sure. Well, actually, before I ever became a politician about a year and a half ago, I served as a prosecutor, so a criminal prosecutor. Most recently with the King County Prosecutor's Office, I was doing domestic violence and sex trafficking prosecution, and then after that did corporate health care fraud prosecution, so returned over $30 million back to taxpayers from corporate fraud.
And what about after you left the King County Prosecutor's Office?
Sure. Well, after that is when I went into doing the corporate fraud prosecution and then ran for the legislature in 2016.
And what about your background as a prosecutor, your background working fraud, doing these sex trafficking type cases? What made you want to transition to run for the House of Representatives and get into politics?
It's a good question. No, I guess, you know, it was at a time when I was just getting kind of frustrated with politics. I was getting frustrated with the way government was working or not working. And, you know, part of, you know, being a prosecutor, I'm there to enforce the laws. I'm not there to write the laws. And, you know, I wasn't happy with how some of the laws were written. And I realized I had a couple choices. I could either stay frustrated about it, or I could try to do something about it, and that was run for office. And I realized, well, if I, for whatever reason, was not elected, I could had all the right to be frustrated at that point. But luckily, I was elected, and now I get a chance to serve and draft laws that best serve the district and the state.
Well, one thing about running for office, and a lot of people that haven't ran put themselves out there, they don't necessarily understand how much pressure is on you and how difficult it is to run a race, but it is extremely challenging to put yourself out there, to be sort of game on all the time, to answer questions, to be polite, to give people the right amount of time, to listen to their viewpoints, and to hear them, to really hear them and give them the feedback that they not only want, but they deserve. So how was that? Did that present some challenges for you? How difficult has that process been?
That's actually one of the more satisfying parts of being in office is, and actually running for office is, was actually meeting with constituents. I you know, believe very much that we need to reform government and make it work more for the people again, and less for corporate special interests. And so the way I ran my race, I was running against an 18-year political incumbent, a multi-term legislative incumbent. It's the type of race where people, when I first started running, didn't have a whole lot of faith that I could pull it off. But I knocked on over 15,000 doors,
wow.
talked to folks, heard what issues were important to folks, rejected all corporate contributions, and ran the race I wanted to run. And so it's actually connecting with people was the most exciting part.
You know, when you knock on doors, I did a little bit of that when I ran my race for the port. What I found out was it wasn't so much about the agenda that I wanted to share with them. It was really what they wanted to tell me, and it proved more valuable to listen to what they wanted and what they needed than to what I wanted to regurgitate to them. And did you find that sort of same I don't know what you would call it, but result in going out door to door?
Well, I think one of the things that may be a surprise or not a surprise to folks is that other people think like you do. And when you go door to door, you hear kind of constant issues that are really important and sometimes very unique to the district that you might not necessarily even think about as a candidate, or might not be the type of thing you'd be running on. But once you see that pattern, you're able to best represent what the public and the people need.
In the intro, I talked about all the diverse, and you heard that, all the diverse interests that put together and represent Washington, and that's from political viewpoints, it's from economic viewpoints, it's from geographic viewpoints. I mean, we have a state that encompasses so many different backgrounds and so many different cultures, and sometimes it's hard to put all those folks together in one place, but that's what we call the Washington legislature, right? And so how does that all come together in the legislature? And do you see that represent the geographic representation, the political representation, and what are your thoughts about how that potpourri comes out?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about my district in particular. I mean, it's generally a suburban district, as you were pointing out, South King, North Pierce counties, and we deal with a range of kind of suburban issues, but it really does represent the cross-section of political philosophies. And you know, when I was doorbelling, I mean, I could go from one door and it'd be Republican, next door would be Democrat, next door Independent, next door Republican, and all in the same neighborhood. And I think, you know, people are able to live together and deal with issues, and the legislature should operate in the same way and working around issues that best serve the state of Washington.
So as a Democrat, how hard is it sometimes to fully represent your district? Because I know you as a person, and I know that you're not just out there representing one political interest. You're trying to represent people in your district. And so sometimes those viewpoints from a political level can end up putting a divide between people and maybe between what you can do. How are you able to resolve some of those conflicts between Republican versus Democratic viewpoints?
Well, I think part of it is just talking to each other. It's usually a good place to start from. I think that, you know, a lot of legislators, they just want to do what's right. They want to do what's right for their constituents, and part of that is making sure that we can get some mutual understanding going and trying to find areas that there's common ground. And I think we get there on a lot of issues in the legislature. The stuff you hear about often in the news can be a little bit more contentious, but by and large, we all are there trying to hopefully do the right thing, and at least that's what I try to do every day.
You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and for the millions of Americans living with a taco obsession, my new $3 taco deal with three of the tacos you love and a small drink can offer relief. Relief for people like Janet, who changed her name to Mrs. Taco.
Actually, it's Ms. Taco.
Or Dave, who celebrates Taco Tuesday every day.
Taco Tuesday!
No, Dave, it's Sunday. And it's your wife's birthday.
Oh, I should get her some tacos!
So please, try my $3 taco deal today. New at Jack in the Box. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Small fountain drink.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available to you. We are here with Mike Pellicciotti. Mike is a state representative from the 30th District representing Federal Way and surrounding communities. We're talking politics, we're talking legislature, we're talking about Mike's interest in running, what he's done, where we're going, and we got lots more to talk about. So, Mike, just before the break, you had talked about why you ran for the legislature in the first place. I mean, you're at the King County Prosecutor's Office. You're handling these different types of cases. You'd been there for a while, and then sort of kind of out of the blue. I mean, maybe you had been thinking about it for a while, but you decide that, hey, I'm going to do something about these issues that are bothering me. And one of those issues is government reform. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe your context or background before you ran and some of the agenda items you had, and then how those have translated into your first term in the House?
Sure. Well, I think generally I kind of like things to be functional and working. And when we look at Olympia, I mean, things just have not been. Now, we're not broken like I think the other Washington is in terms of not being able to get things done. But there's a lot of work to do here in our state as well in terms of making sure Olympia works for the people again. And so I've really been trying to work on government reform issues that will best serve the public's interest.
Well, let's maybe I'll throw one out there. In the news recently, and Governor Inslee ended up vetoing this. He rejected it. But this was such a hot issue within the last 3 months, I'd say, and that was whether or not the legislature should be exempted from public disclosure requests, right? And they didn't want their text messages and their emails to be subject to disclosure like other government offices and officials are. When the public got word of that, I mean, I've never seen such a groundswell of opposition to any proposed legislation until that bill. And all the papers ended up publishing all the people that had voted in favor and voted against. And I remember seeing your name against that, one of the few votes against that. So can you tell us a little bit about how that bill came up, what it was like in the legislature when it came up, and then, you know, what where you stood on that, what you said, what the result was?
Well, I think public records belong to the public, and that's why they're called that. And Look, I mean, since day one in the legislature, I have voluntarily provided my public records. It's just something we uniquely did. Kind of, I stood alone in doing that. So when the media did its media request for public records, we complied with that request. And so it was very easy when this issue was proposed that to be the first for me to be the first member of the House to step forward and publicly oppose it. It was certainly easy to vote against it, and I was happy to be the first legislator to write the governor to ask him to veto it. And I'm certainly glad the governor did. I think you mentioned I was with the King County Prosecutor's Office. I got all types of sensitive emails from individuals. It's no different at city councils. It's no different at school boards. It's no different from other areas of government. They have to comply with public records. The legislature is not that special. And so I think it's important as we move forward that we find ways that's workable. And it, frankly, makes it so the legislature better understands the public records laws it's imposing on other people if it applies to them as well.
You know, that's a great point. Not only does that make the legislature understand the public disclosure request laws better by them also being subject to it, but how about putting a check on yourselves? Because all those other political offices, entities, and people that you mentioned, they didn't have the power to pass a law that would exempt them from the public disclosure, but the legislature did. And talk about an abuse of that power. This really was seen as an abuse of that power. And I'm so glad that you stood up in opposition to it, because to have our legislature, which we think is progressive and is sort of on the cutting edge when you look at us on a national basis, that we're always sort of leading, not following, and we're leading on issues that are in the public interest. And this one, we really took a step back, didn't we?
Well, yes. I think we certainly did not meet public expectations, to say the least. And it's one of the reasons that I opposed it. Look, I hear the word accountability a lot in Olympia. I hear it from other legislators talking about this group needs to be held more accountable, or these people need to be held more accountable. Well, the legislature needs to be held accountable too. And it's that much more important when we're writing the laws that we're writing them in a way that holds ourselves accountable in the way that the public expects, because we work for the public. That's how the system's set up.
At the same time, you know, and I'll just play a little devil's advocate here. I mean, I absolutely support the position that you had in the legislature in opposing this legislation, and then Governor Inslee vetoing it. I was, you know, obviously on board there. And as a lawyer that does public disclosure requests, you know, I want access to this information. At the same time, I understand how difficult it can be, especially for smaller agencies, to respond to these types of requests. And there's also, unfortunately, Mark Lindquist, I think, has been subject to this, when there's sort of a mix public use of a phone versus a private use, and you know, and that becomes difficult to just what do you disclose, and what if the phone's my private phone, but I sometimes get political or else business related, you know, messages on there. But so that's one issue. But the other issue is just cost. And I saw that I think it was the Office of Insurance Commissioner. Maybe there's some other legislation that came down. And I haven't followed this all that closely, but it seems like there is going to be some change on how people request information or how much it's going to cost when they get it. Did you follow that at all?
Sure. But, you know, it goes back to that underlying point, which is if the legislature is going to create the expectations for local governments on what it has to do, it should apply to the legislature, because only then will the legislature know how it's really affecting government. And I think that a lot of the points you raise, those are things that we can continue to work on, but it needs to be in a way that's in the public interest.
When you talk about government reform, it's not just this issue, obviously, with a legislature and public disclosure request, but you've also tackled some bigger issues in the legislature, it seems. And one of those is going after special interest dark money. Can you tell us about what dark money is and what you've done with these special interests, trying to disclose or shine light on this?
Well, so much about government transparency is just knowing where there's influence and what the public's legislators are doing. And one of the things that we have, or we had until the bill that I led in the House with the help of Senator Billig in the Senate is now the law, is getting dark money out of politics. And so what dark money is essentially right now the law was set up so that there is a loophole that you could spend nearly unlimited funds and direct it through organizations into campaigns, so whether to an individual or to an initiative campaign. And there was no obligation to report those funds that were passing through certain nonprofit organizations. And that loophole was significant. You could spend millions of dollars. If you had were a special interest, you'd give millions of dollars, and the public would have no idea the source of that money. And so what my bill did, and is, the governor signed this new law in about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago into effect, was it closed that loophole and made it so that, people can still donate whatever money they want to. They can spend tens of thousands of dollars, but you have to disclose it. The public has a right to know the source of that money, because the public has a right to know who's influencing their legislators, where that money in politics is having an effect. And I think until we really get at the root cause of that, we're not going to have the reforms that we need in government. So it was an important step forward, but we got a lot more to do.
You know, that discussion makes me remember the legislation that came up about GMO labeling, and it seemed like there was so much more money coming out from out of state opposing the bill to require GMO type labeling, genetically engineered or manufactured materials in your food, and you. The public really was in favor of this type of labeling because they wanted to know what's in my food. Is it really, am I having wheat that's actual wheat, or is it genetically manufactured materials? Like how when I read an ingredient label, how do I know what's in those ingredients unless you tell me, unless you disclose it? And so there were big interests from those industries that had products that had engineered food that didn't want to disclose that. And they felt that it was worth putting in millions of dollars into this campaign to defeat that bill, because in the end it would save them millions of dollars. And I don't know that we ever figured out where that money came from, but that bill was defeated. I hope it comes back, but it was defeated at that time. Is that sort of some of the dark money special interest type, is that an example of something that you were fighting with your bill?
Well, certainly with large initiative campaigns, that's where you're more likely to see the dark money moving. And to be fair, all political persuasions do it. The left and the right, they put a lot of money through certain organizations, and through this loophole, people are able to avoid knowing where that money's coming from. What's great about this bill, this dark money bill that we passed this year, is that it just closes that loophole and shines the light on the dark money that was moving before.
So when is that bill going? Has it been signed into law, or does it take effect already?
Yeah, so the governor signed it into law. We had a bill signing actually in Tukwila probably about 3 weeks ago or so, and so it'll be going into effect in a few months, and will allow for a lot more government transparency.
Is it called the Stormy Daniels Law?
It is not. It was called the Disclose Act. And deals with dark money politics.
If you follow my show, and if you don't, you should. But we've been tackling Stormy Daniels the last few weeks, because we just can't help ourselves here, and either can the nation, obviously. And I think even not to get too far afield from our topic, but yesterday there's a hearing in federal court over Michael Cohen trying to keep these documents back, from trying to claw them back to look at the privileged nature of the documents to determine whether or not the government should have access to them. And so far those efforts have been defeated, which I think is a real positive, and the judge is seemingly doing a really good job. Trump wanted to review the documents first, and that was an unusual request, but he wanted to carve out all the documents related to him and see what he wanted to turn over and redisclose. And again, the judge is doing a good job. There might be a moderator there. But that to me, your bill could have been called the Stormy Daniels political campaign contribution shed the light law.
Maybe off message on that, but yeah, no, it's I think the Disclose Act was a good name, and really the heart of it's just getting dark money out of politics so we can have more government transparency.
You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM.
Right now, Cholula, one of America's favorite hot sauces, is teaming up with Jack in the Box for the Cholula Buttery Jack. With Cholula hot sauce, crispy jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese on a signature bun. Try it with Cholula fries. Jack! Can you cool it with the guitar, please?
Sorry, just got a little excited about the burger.
Try the Cholula Buttery Jack from Jack in the Box. Part of the Buttery Jack family. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Unbelievable.
I'm done.
Hi, I'm Noah. from Know Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.knowyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@knowyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights. Only on Clay 1180 AM, the show dedicated to helping educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. We're broadcasting out of Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington, as we always do on these wonderful Tuesday afternoons. And today I have, I'm lucky and fortunate to have Mike Policiotti from the State House of Representatives of the state of Washington with us today. And we're talking government reform. We're going to talk about your car tabs here in a moment. But I want to close the loop, Mike, if I can, about some of the government reforms bills or things that you've been involved in since that originally when you ran for the House. Some of your background was to tackle some of these issues, some of these transparency type issues, and you've already been a voice of reason against the legislature, standing up, one of the few legislators that stood up to say, no, I am against exempting out the legislators and the legislature from these PDR requests, because I'm about more transparency, not about less. I'm about more accountability, not about less. And so, you know, I commend you on that, and I know our listeners commend you on that too. But what are some of the other bills that you've sponsored or been involved with that focus on government-type reform?
Well, obviously, some of the stuff we've talked about, I am happy that we were able to be successful in opposing the legislator's effort to create a legislative exemption for public records. Excited about the dark money bill that we were just talking about, to get dark money out of politics. But there have been some that I've put forward that I have yet to get across the finish line that have more work to do. One is closing the revolving door for lobbyists. And what I think a lot of folks don't know here in Washington is that right now, if you're an elected official, you know, whether you're like me as a state representative, you're the governor, you name it, right now someone can immediately become a paid lobbyist upon finishing their government service. So that means for the amount of time it takes someone to empty out their office and walk back up the stairs and walk back into the office, whoever's holding it now, they can start lobbying that person as a paid lobbyist, and it's time to close that revolving door. So my bill would require a one-year cooling off period, which I think longer would be appropriate, but I'm trying to be thoughtful and reasonable to allow for closing out a lobbyist revolving door.
Well, so this issue's been in the news recently in a related fashion, and that's the EPA director Pruitt. He ended up running from the lobbyist couple, this condominium or townhouse or house in the Washington, D.C. for $50 a night. And that was well below market, and he could have it whenever he wanted to, this room or the house or part of it. But everyone said that's well below market. And it also it posed a conflict, because here he is supporting legislation or supporting a position that that these folks that he's running from, that he's cozy with, he's supporting their position, and that's a reduction in the environmental regulations, which is what the Trump administration wants to do too, is reduce the Obama-era type regulations, because we've been going in the right direction. and Pruitt's been clawing those back. So here he is cozying up with special interest and working and renting with them and having these transactions that are not fair market type deals. They're not arm's length type deals. And so the situation you're talking about here back home in the state of Washington seems to me to be similar, because you have a representative, for example, and maybe they were leader of the House or the leader of a particular party, and they end up serving their term or multiple terms. They end up knowing how the House of Representatives or the Senate works, right? So they have this inner workings, but they develop these relationships, and those relationships lead to this sort of quid pro quo. You know, hey, Bob, remember when I voted for you when you had no support and I stood by you on this bill? Well, I need a favor too. I need this Agrarian Act or this Agriculture Act, or I need these taxes, or I need this company to get accepted out of these taxes, or I need something back from you. And it's just too cozy of a relationship. And those sorts of things, if they're done person to person, not on text, not on email, they're not going to be subject to public disclosure. No one's going to know about that, right? And that's that backroom dealing. That's that non-transparent type government that you're trying to attack, isn't it?
Right. And that's why it all comes together, both the government transparency, where we've got to have government transparency in a larger context. But it's even worse than that, because think of it this way. If someone's a paid lobbyist immediately upon finishing their elected office, whether it's true or not, it raises the public question, well, when did you work out this deal to become a paid lobbyist? And having a cooling off period is not unreasonable.
No.
And I also reject the notion that elected officials can't do any other job but more Olympia work.
Yeah.
So I really think that this is an important step forward. And I'm also embarrassed to say the federal government is actually steps ahead of us. And that's something you don't hear me say very often. They've had a 2-year waiting period, a cooling off period. So asking just for a 1-year cooling off period, it does not seem unreasonable to me. I've introduced it in the House, passed it through our state government committee, and just can't get enough support to get it to the floor of the House. And it's something I think is really important to restore confidence in government.
Yeah, and you know, when these outside interests are able to hire insider hacks, someone that's already got their foot in the door, it's really unfair. And I'll tell you who this bill protects. It actually protects not just the public, but it protects legislatures. Legislators, because when someone no longer runs for office, or they're defeated, and then a public interest group wants to pay them, you know, $500,000 or $100,000 or whatever the remuneration is to go and lobby for them on behalf of their bill or their industry in the government, the problem is their friends are still in there, because you make relationships. So you obviously have friendships that you build, and those are the people that when you if you're outside, you lose your seat at the table in the House. You come back to your friends, and those are the people that feel the pressure. And your bill will end up creating a wedge. It'll provide protection for the people that need it in the legislature that can't help because of the friendship that had been developed and the history of voting and supporting on each other's bills. It'll give them the protection that they need so that they won't feel threatened or pushed to back something that they otherwise, it doesn't benefit their district or they don't believe in.
Well, and you know, we started this conversation earlier when you were asking about, well, how does the legislature come together? You got, you know, different parties, and it seems like people are at odds. Well, what's amazed me is that sometimes folks come together the easiest in the legislature when it's something that helps other legislators. And it goes back to that, we need the accountability. We need to hold legislators accountable. We need to keep speaking up what is in the public interest.
You know, that reminded me when you were a kid. I know when I was growing up, you remember that commercial that now is not a commercial, it was a cartoon. It must have been on like Sunday morning cartoon of how a bill becomes a law. I remember the little bill with the arms and stuff, and it would take its, you know, it'd go through the process and everything.
I'm just a bill.
just a bill.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
I wish I had set that up and I could play it back for everybody that hasn't heard it. But those of you listening out there, remember, I'm just a bill.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, yes. Schoolhouse Rock.
That's right.
Well, that was the inspiration. No doubt, Mike, for your tenure at the university or at running, no doubt is an inspiration for you to run for the House of Representatives and continue to be there. It was Mr. Bill.
It feels like Mr. Smith goes to Washington sometimes, but yes, that's right. Look, we should expect government to work, and we sure as heck should expect government to work on behalf of the public interest. And we're going to get there, but we're just going to have to keep fighting for it.
Well, I want to talk about credit freeze and what you've done to help consumers. But before we go there, I just want to pick up another topic that we were discussing a moment ago, and that's how the legislators work together. So first of all, you know, at the in the intro, I said that there was this lower house of representatives. I mean, is there a distinction? And I know there is a distinction between the House of Representatives and the Senate, clearly. And there's more representatives, and perhaps there's a. We're not going to get into maybe the different functions and how things come out of subcommittee and that sort of thing. But is there a class system a little bit between representatives and senators? I mean, when we talk about lower versus upper, or is there that feel sometimes?
Well, I think everyone, there are no shortage of egos in Olympia. I guess I'll start with that. And so some people have bigger egos than others, and they justify that for various reasons. But, you know, it's one of the things we always point out is if you put a ball in the middle of the rotunda of the Olympia, it doesn't roll one way or the other. We have two separate bodies. And I will say I really enjoy being in the House. There's more of a collegial atmosphere, and part of that is because there are more legislators. There's a need to work more in a collaborative way, and I think that results in better government. It's allowed for us to get a lot of the bills out of the House that we want to, and we still have some hold up on some bills in the Senate. So I think every chamber is different, has different cultures, but I'm really happy being in the House.
So you have an office in Federal Way, and towards the end of the show, we'll end up getting an address for you, and I'll repeat that so people can contact you by telephone, email, and also physically if they want to drop by your office. But in Olympia, do the legislators have an office in Olympia too, or is it just in their district?
No, we have small little offices. At least in the House, we have small little offices in Olympia, but it's great because it's where we meet with constituents. So during the legislative session, we have a lot of constituents come visit. It's one of the things I enjoy the most about being in Olympia, and we usually meet in our office when they come by.
Is there within the rotunda? Is there a restaurant or a bar or some type of like special club that the legislators go back into and have like private meals and dining and end up having these like sort of backroom talks, or is this all in my imagination?
Well, there is a cafeteria in the rotunda.
Probably not smoking.
No, there's a cafeteria which gives a chance to grab some food, especially on the late nights. The workers in the cafeteria, it's particularly appreciated because we'll sometimes go 11 o'clock, p.m., 1 in the morning, and often they're still working to have food to make sure that we're operating. And I think that always helps in terms of people being able to be easier to get along with when they're not hungry. So, but yeah, other than that, I think we meet with folks, other legislators, all on the floor, and we talk about issues, and that's been that way for over 100 years.
I went to law school in Arkansas, and I think you might know that. But when I visited the Arkansas legislature, I think that they did have these sort of private clubs within their state house and state senate. And I think I was in there, and they had the old leather, brown leather chairs and couches in there, and they had like the carpeted walls and sort of thing. And apparently, and it was dark, and I don't know if they served alcohol or not, but that's where a lot of these meetings took place. And yeah, it's not as transparent of a scene as what you're describing to me as happening in Washington.
There's definitely no alcohol served in the cafeteria.
Yeah,
there's pop and water, and I think some coffee, definitely a lot of coffee late at night. But it is important that other legislators meet with each other. It's part of how we can work out and reach compromises. And the more collaboration you can have, I think that is a good thing.
You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM.
Right now, Cholula, one of America's favorite hot sauces, is teaming up with Jack in the Box for the Cholula Buttery Jack. With Cholula hot sauce, crispy jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese on a signature bun. Try it with Cholula fries. Jack! Can you cool it with the guitar, please?
Sorry, just got a little excited about the burger.
Try the Cholula Buttery Jack from Jack in the Box, part of the Buttery Jack family. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Unbelievable.
I'm done.
Hi, I'm Noah. from Know Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.knowyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@knowyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, a show dedicated to helping you, the listener, be informed about your legal rights and resources available to you. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowyourrights.com. You can also email me, and many people do, and I'm happy to read your email and try to respond as best I can and provide you resources, or to end up getting your topics or issues on air if it's appropriate to talk about on air. And sometimes those topics are really general, like foreclosures or mortgage or bankruptcy type related issues, or on consumer purchasing cars. Those sorts of things are all in play for us to talk about on this show. And so I want to hear from you. Email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. noah@knowyourrights.com. It's always great to hear from the listeners, and I want to make sure that what we talk about here is relevant to you, and I want to make sure that I can help you and give you the right resources. Today, we're talking Washington legislature. I have in studio with me Mike Pellicciotti. We're talking about government reform. We've talked about public disclosure laws and that big mess, that sort of big developing scandal that Governor Inslee ended up vetoing, but that Mike Pellicciotti took a stand for all of us on and really put himself out there. And we certainly really appreciate that for him for standing up for our rights and making doing the right thing. Mike, I wanted to talk to you. I want to shift gears a little bit. Before one of the last breaks, I talked about the car tab issue. And I'll tell you, I voted in favor of Sound Transit, the expansion. I want Sound Transit to come. I want the train to come down from the light rail to come from Seattle to Federal Way. And I want it to go into Tacoma. And how far it goes beyond that, I don't know. But we live here. I want it to go into Tacoma. I want to be able to go to the Mariners game or the Seahawks game, or if I got to go to downtown. I don't want to constantly fight traffic. It's also super dangerous to drive. There's potholes. I mean, that's another whole segment that we could do, is the darn potholes on the road and where we're going to get money to fix those. But, I mean, they're so darn dangerous, you know? Like, I remember where they are, and so I stay out of those lanes when I'm on the freeway. And, like, I'm constantly having to give myself space on the freeway when I'm driving to look for those big holes. But it's dangerous to drive, and that's the point. And it's also a lot more convenient traffic-wise, time-wise, to be on the train. So I voted in favor of it. What I didn't vote for was a valuation of my car on my car tab when I end up paying for my registration annually. I didn't vote for some extreme valuation of the purchase price of my original car. And I do have newer cars. I mean, they're both bought new. And why don't they depreciate like everything else in my life? Why am I being stuck with a price that I paid like 3 or 4 years ago or some inflated valuation? My car tabs are north of $500, and I'm hearing from other people that theirs are even more. So what have you heard from your district? I mean, how angry were residents of the 30th district about this? How much has this been a subject of debate? What have you done about it? And where are we going to go from here?
Well, the valuation system made me angry, too. I mean, I obviously heard from constituents, but look, there are those on the left who don't want to take a dime from Sound Transit, and then there are those on the right who want to dismantle light rail altogether. What I hear from constituents is they say, well, how about we just get a valuation system that tracks with Kelley Blue Book value estimates and actually represents the value of our cars? And that's why I wrote a bill to do just that. Dealing with the car tab issue has been one of the more challenging issues, because it's one of those issues where you need reasonable-minded folks, both Democrats and Republicans, to come together to fix it. Because those on the far right don't want to fix it because they want it destroyed and they want to keep this issue alive to keep talking about it. And those on the left have a lot of pressure from their own constituents to not do anything that's taking away money from Sound Transit. I had a bill in the House. I've passed it three times in the House of Representatives with, at various points, every Democrat and every Republican representing Sound Transit taxpayers voted for my bill. Three times we passed that. Could not get, the first time, couldn't even get it even assigned to a committee in the Senate. Second time, I could not even get a hearing in the second this last year. While there's been a lot of political jockeying around the issue, the reality is we need to fix the valuation. My bill would have returned $780 million back to taxpayers. It would fix the valuation rate and still keep light rail on track. And when I talk to my constituents, that's what they want. And when you get every Democrat and every Republican representing Sound Transit taxpayers voting for something like that, and we pass it three times, that tells you we've actually found a path that's workable. Right. We need to get that through. I am not going to quit on that issue because good government demands it.
Well, that's I'm very sort of invigorated to hear you say that and your stance on that, and that it's not going to go away because. I thought this issue would already be taken care of by now. I thought that I would get a refund from year one, and here we are in year two of this tax, and the bills are coming back, and I'm paying the same amount or more that I did last year, and I thought I would be getting a credit by now. And I'm talking to people, and this happened to me on the campaign trail too. I'd go out into different communities, and people on fixed incomes were so angry. They were so angry about having to pay these type of car tabs and not having an income to pay for that, and this was an increased cost for them, and they felt that we were defrauded more or less by the proposition that it didn't disclose to us in the voter pamphlet clearly the type of that valuation process that we'd be put through for these tabs, and if we voted in favor of Sound Transit, because you know what, if that had been made clear to voters about how much it would really cost them, I don't think it would have passed. I'm not sure that it would have.
Right. Well, and I think your point about the fact that the tax rate was in the voter's guide, but what was not in there was saying we're going to be that Sound Transit was going to be using an outdated valuation system from the 1990s. But here's the thing: the legislature passed that 3 years ago, and so I'd be asking a lot of questions of those who voted for the transportation package 3 or 4 years ago that put in this valuation rate, this outdated valuation rate. And so, look, it's not about casting blame at this point. What we need to do is just fix it. We need to fix it, and we need to fix it as soon as possible, because every day that's passing, every day someone is paying a car tab with a valuation system that's wrong and inflated, and that's just not right.
So would your bill, and I'm assuming that doesn't, that this would be too much of a dent, but your bill wouldn't repay or give people money back if it passed, would it?
But my bill does. So what my bill would do, there are limitations on, it's Noah, you're right, so going to some of the legal aspects of it. There are challenges related to where the Constitution limits the refunding of money from the state treasury. What my bill does to try to address that, it says it creates a credit going forward, and for the first couple years, it would create a double, or probably when I reintroduce the bill, a triple credit, to make it so that the past payments are essentially being made whole in a way that's constitutionally compliant while at the same time doing what's right.
So what can the people do? Is it contact their senator, their state senator, to say, hey, look, we need to get Mike's car tab bill into a committee. We need some action on it from the Senate. Is that sort of the action that the people need to take?
I think that's what I've been advocating. So I would love to see that. My House bill was House Bill 2201. It'll receive a new number next year, but that's exactly right. And just have a reasonable, common sense way of fixing government problems. That's really what we should be doing.
So another topic that is of interest to our listeners and of interest to me is these credit reporting bureaus. So there's been recently, it was TransUnion, right? That was Equifax that ended up having the breach, and millions of people's datas were compromised and released to third parties. And we don't know the extent of that damage, I guess, yet, or what the ramifications are going to be, but it could be very serious. And there have been some lawsuits already against Equifax because of that data breach. I mean, they have so much information about us, the consumer, and like Facebook, but it's financial related information, all the credit card history, your loan history, Social Security number history, credit history. It's such an important history for us. And it's a history that bad people could do bad things to us because of. So one way that when there's a data breach or when information is stolen, whether it's from your mailbox or from your mail or from your phone or whatever, from Equifax, one thing that you can do is you can ask that your credit be frozen, right? And then you call in or you end up contacting them, and lo and behold, they charge you money for it. I mean, what the heck is going on? And that should have been a service. That should have been a service. So what efforts have you been involved in addressing these sorts of issues?
Yeah, no, it is a travesty, actually. I mean, it's just from a consumer protection standpoint, it's just a total fail. We should not be in a situation where a corporation loses your data and then turns around and charges you to protect your data from that same corporation. I introduced a bill last session which made it so that in those situations a credit freeze would be free. You could temporarily freeze and unfreeze your credit for free. Thanks to Senator Mullett and his work in the Senate, that bill, that credit freeze bill got across the finish line this year. So now, as of I think it's like June 11th, something like that, we're only maybe a month or two away. Your listeners can freeze and unfreeze their credit for free, and that's the right thing for consumers.
Oh, that's fantastic. I want to talk to you about, there's one other issue area I want to talk to you about, and that was your efforts with respect to corporate crime. We're going to be a little bit pinched on time, but what have you done, or what do you see upcoming with respect to bills addressing like white collar type crime?
Sure. Well, as I was pointing out earlier, I reject all corporate contributions for my campaign. I think that's really important to do what's on behalf of the public. And I introduced a bill, the Corporate Crime Act, last year. I was able to get it through the House. I've passed it now twice in the House. Once again, could not pass it through the Senate. This year got to the floor of the Senate, did not get a vote. We have not increased the penalties for corporations convicted of a crime. So the type of crime that you or any of your listeners do, say a Class A felony that would send you to life in prison without the possibility of parole. A corporation right now, the maximum fine is $10,000.
Wow.
It has not been increased since 1924. My bill increases it to $1 million per offense and gives us a chance to do more appropriate enforcement.
Yeah, and I think people pay attention to that type of that type of criminality when you got to put your money where your mouth is, and that would dissuade some people from taking those efforts. Well, Mike, how do constituents reach you?
Sure. Well, you can always give my office a phone call, which is 253-517-5181. My email is just mike.pelliciotti@ledge.wa.gov. Just probably easier just to look up Mike P. Legislature. You'll probably find me on Google, and you can always shoot me an email or stop by our district office in the Federal Way.
You've got a great Scrabble name, Mike Pelliciotti. That's for sure.
Well, it's like Mississippi, all double consonants.
You've been listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. I want to give a shout out and thank you to Mike Pelliciotti for joining us today. Thank you very much, Mike.
It's really been a pleasure, Noah. Thank you.
And to you listeners out there, thank you again for taking the time to join us and listen to us on this Tuesday. I hope that you come back next Tuesday and are with us for another new exciting topic. Who knows what we're going to talk about with Stormy Daniels and all these things going on. Michael Cohen, subpoenas of privileged documents, lawyers' offices. Who knows what Trump does next? So it's always exciting out there. Make sure you stay tuned. You follow us. Check out the website, knowyourrights.com. And always, always listen to Noah on Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. Thanks for joining.